tonight our main speaker is Lila R.
My name is Lila, and I'm an alcoholic. You see each other a lot. I never see you. I think I'll take a minute just to look. You know, if I maintain my spiritual condition a few more days, I'll be sober 27 years. So, around the time of my birthday, can't help but reflect. Can't help it. You know, they told me when I got sober, if I did four things, I would stay sober for the rest of my life. How I did that was a day at a time. That I could not drink, that I had 10 meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, that I understand the material, the big book, and the 12 and 12, and that I had to find God. Four things. I wish I could tell you that it has gotten more complicated than that. I have complicated it. But the reason that I'm here tonight is because I go to meetings, don't drink. I have a very good understanding for myself. The material in the program for Alcoholics Anonymous, and the biggest shock of all, is that I have found a God of my own understanding. Amazing. I don't know how long it's going to take you to find a God of your own understanding. Hope not as long as it took me. But I'll tell you this. The peace I have achieved in myself, for myself, by myself with this God is indescribable. You know, I used to hesitate talking about God until I got to be about 18 or 19 years old. I didn't understand what was wrong with me. I had everything going for me, everything, all the sociably acceptable, wonderful things that people pat you on the back for and say, isn't that terrific, as they judge your outsides. And they tell you that the money and the property and the prestige and the power and the nonsense and the ability to do all those things. And you know, if you stay sober long enough, you're just going to clean up your act. There's a good chance you'll be reasonably successful. In fact, when I first got sober, I was so powerless over alcohol. And in the first year, I really had a sense of the powerlessness that I felt over people and places and things and all of it. I was really surrendered. By the second, third, fourth, fifth year, I was taking all of that back. By the tenth year, I was in high gear. By the 15th year, I had more than I ever imagined I would have. On my way to the 20th year, I had people envying me for what they thought I had. And I did not understand why, inside, something was missing. I should have known it was because I was an alcoholic. You see, I'm the kind of alcoholic that wants it all. I drank it all, and I want it all. I want all there is. And just because I'm sober, the nature of who I am, that I want all there is, hasn't changed one slight bit. And when I began to realize that what I wasn't getting was enough peace, that I wasn't getting that sense of balance inside, well, then it's not enough, is it? That became really important for me as I went through that dark time, the time they talk about frequently, if you listen, in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, the time when there would be a decision that must be arrived between you and your God. Not you and your group, you and your sponsor, you and Jack, Tim, Harry, Joan, or Mary. You and your God. I wish that for you. It's a fantastic, fantastic experience. Frightening, but fantastic experience. Isn't it funny that during that experience, when I was thinking, oh my, you know, because one of the great things about Alcoholics Anonymous is you stay sober long enough and you really have this desire to want it all and to want to do things in a manner that's different than anything you ever imagined. When you change, you know, all that's required of you to have a really this joyous life, they talk about in Alcoholics Anonymous, is that you change everything you've ever believed in. Starting out with every bad habit you've ever had. And then you get new habits, and then you have to change those. About every 5 years, you change all those habits. People say, well, hi, don't you ever get bored? Don't your steps ever change for you? I mean, how can you keep reading the same thing? I mean, how do you, they continue, I don't see them here, but how can you continue to work them? Well, I continue to work them because my life continues to change. The one big thing I never wanted to have happen when I was drinking. I so didn't want anything to change. I sat in the same bar stool with the same people in the same location at the same time. I drank the same kind of alcohol. Unless there was nothing else, of course. Simple drinker, simple alcoholic. Just one of those alcoholics. Don't like drunk logs, really. Take up too much of my time. You hear enough of them, I would imagine. As a matter of fact, if you attend the kind of meetings and as many as I do, you hear nothing but, most of the time, 5 minutes for recovery. Well, I'll give you lots to talk about after I leave. Because I'm going to talk about my recovery. I think it's my responsibility. That's what happened to me around that 18 or 19 year when God and I had this big battle, you know? When I found out that the sixth step in the 12 and said that I had to cooperate. Can you imagine all those years reading it over and over and over and never seeing the word cooperate? Cooperate with God. When I found out that this will that we're never supposed to exert on our own, because we're not supposed to have any, was the most important single solitary thing that I owned. That if it wasn't for my will, I wouldn't show up at those meetings and I wouldn't sit in that chair and I wouldn't be here tonight. That my will was to become critically important to me. That I was to use my will to make room for God. Use my will to make room for God. Use my will to make room for God. My Lord, it takes everything you've got in you. I was the kind of alcoholic that drank anything that... Well, I drank scotch. I love scotch. I mean, I loved it. And then I loved whiskey. And then I liked anything that was brown. There was nothing that was brown, I drank anything that was white. There was nothing that was white, I drank anything at all. Anything at all. I was also the kind of alcoholic. It began to work for me when I thought about it. When I thought about it. When I knew I was going to have that drink, I began to have what I now consider equal to a spiritual experience. I got a sense of calm. I knew it was just a matter of time. Everything was going to be all right. And as I poured that drink, I actually would have a physical sensation. I would get stronger, prepare for it. I used to know what it would taste like before I actually put it to my lips. I had a complete and total understanding and dedication to my drink. Is it any wonder that now I have a complete and total dedication to my spiritual path? I never, ever, ever, as an alcoholic, did not know where my drink was coming from. I don't understand alcoholics who didn't know where their next drink was going to come from. How could you put yourself in such a ridiculous position as to not know where your next drink was coming? I always knew. And now, I always know, no matter where I have been in this world, where there's a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, I have to know. I need it just as much. Just a different set of habits. Oh, I used to hate rituals. Hate them. Used to claim that I hated them. But I had such a ritual around drinking. Although I must tell you, I have never had a drink with a cherry and a strawberry and an onion and a toothpick and all that other stuff in a little tiny glass. Can you imagine such a waste? of space when you could have quality alcohol in there. I drank my scotch in a water glass, room temperature, half a glass at a time, until the end. But then everybody's story is different at the end, isn't it? At the end, I drank directly out of a bottle. It's easier to control. Because by that time, I could not move my head. I was beginning to suffer from paralysis. It was a terrific thing. Got me here. Doesn't matter what gets you here. Doesn't really matter. It doesn't matter why I'm an alcoholic, whether my family had alcoholism, whether they don't. By the way, they're riddled with it. But does it matter? Probably the only thing that's significant is that I'm Irish, and that's almost a given, you know. But I don't know why, when, where, don't care. I would say that probably the majority of things that affect young people as they grow up affected me and my family. But I have friends that have had the same kind of effect, and they never took a drink. I'm an alcoholic because I have an allergy to alcohol. I'm an alcoholic because when I drink alcohol, I drink one, I drink two, I drink three, I'm gone. That's why I'm an alcoholic. That's all I've ever needed to know. I spent years in therapy trying to find out more. It was great information. Any extension of the fourth and fifth step are more than acceptable. Bottom line, I'm an alcoholic. Alcoholic. And I was so delighted to find out that I am a recovered alcoholic, just like it says in the book. You see, I don't drink anymore. I do not drink. But because I'm the kind of alcoholic that would feel better thinking about getting my drink, I know that I am the kind of alcoholic that must at all times keep this thinking within the same safe and sane framework of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because left to myself, I will forget. I have a kind of a memory that has a 24-hour little clock on the end of it. And at the end of 24 hours, if I have not done something of this new habit of life that I have recovered, discovered, this recovery, if I'm not doing something about my mind, if I'm not making room for this God, then I can assure you that all those little voices will come back one by one. You know, it's so easy now. People bounce in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous with just regularity, like rubber balls. When I got sober, they never said you could slip. It was like you just never thought you could do that. You never thought you could. Never entered my mind. I mean, they said, this is it. You're here. You're here forever. For the rest of your life. You have a terminal disease that's going to kill you. Not that I really cared about that part. I have to tell you the truth. I didn't care about dying. Why should I care about dying when alcoholism is the most sociably acceptable form of suicide? You just do it a day at a time, and everybody watches you. And nobody has the courage to say anything. Not that you'd listen anyway. Dying. Did I care whether I died or you died? Did I drive drunk and do all of those kinds of things? Of course. Did it matter? No. Absolutely nothing came in front of that alcohol. I made room for that alcohol. I made room for it to be my partner, my friend, my lover, my life, my God. It was everything to me. I made room for alcohol. I made room for alcohol. I made room for alcohol. Nothing else got in the way. I can assure you that after all of this time on AA, nothing else gets in the way of my peace. Because I have the kind of mind that if I don't pay attention to that, then it'll be just a short period of time and I will forget. You know, and for all the time that I was searching for that God, I found peace and safety for an hour and a half in the meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. I knew that for that hour and a half, I could be safe. I knew through that hour and a half I could somewhat of it, most of it, forget about all the things that troubled me, and I had peace for just an hour and a half. Incredible. And then it kind of stretched out, and I would read a little material, you know, a little Keep it at the big book. Keep it in the bathroom. Most important bathroom in the house, really. Look at all of you. I mean, you spend a lot of time in there. Easy room for me. And I read a little bit of the... And I would get a little bit of peace from that. Just a little bit of peace. And maybe I'd talk to someone, or someone would talk to me between the meetings, and I'd get a little bit of peace from that. And I began to restructure my life. And I loved that the meetings start on time, and you could count on the break, and they would end on time. And all the ritual that I had in that bar became as equally as important to me sober. I liked the rituals that the meeting started in the reading of chapter 5, and they did the 12, and God forbid they should do anything else. And even though I intended to stay for just a little time, just until I got it back together, because you see, there was a part of my mind that said, it's just a matter of time, you're out of here. A couple of weeks, 3-4 weeks, you get yourself back. You can move your head again, get your strength back, and you can leave and get out of here. Get away. I had already begun to see that everybody was not a saint just because they got sober. Began to realize that you do not equate sanity and sobriety. They do not necessarily go hand in hand. The people aren't perfect. They're just people that stopped drinking. And some of them are still suffering from untreated recovery. I'll never forget, I was sober many, many, many years. Not too long ago, and I kept wanting every member of Alcoholics Anonymous to be perfect. Can you imagine? Living among you for years and still expecting that you're never going to disappoint me, betray me, or let me down. So the guy takes me, for thousands upon thousands upon thousands of dollars that I would never have given to anyone else. But the man was a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I knew he was a creep. He had been since the very day he got sober. I never even liked the guy. And while I would have examined that paperwork a lot more thoroughly, it was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, I signed the bottom line because it was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I can assure you I never saw the money. Interesting. I wanted to leave. I was so disappointed. But I didn't. I have watched people treat each other terribly in Alcoholics Anonymous. I have watched individuals and groups of people and small groups and large groups treat people and ostracize them for all sorts of nonsense. I have seen people judge people unmercifully. I'll tell you what I found out. Found out in the last couple of years. It was fantastic. Scared me to death. I guarantee you that if you judge somebody, you'll do it. Guaranteed. You don't think so, but I guarantee you it will happen in your sobriety if you live long enough. Guaranteed. So enjoy me tonight. Someday you'll be up here. You might be talking about God. Somebody once said to me, you know, talk about God, you're going to scare away the newcomers. I guess they haven't read the same book I read. They're talking about God in the first visit with the guy. Reinforce that God thing on the second visit. I don't know about you, but there's nothing bigger than scotch for me but God. Nothing bigger. Nothing bigger than that alcohol. But a spiritual experience that I have had to have, a spiritual awakening over and over and over and over and over and over again. And it is promised to me over and over again, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of what? Attending lots of meetings, working with 16 million newcomers as a result of these steps. Chances are, however, if you're working the steps, you'll be inclined to do all those other things. And then it says you get to carry this message to the alcoholic who still suffers. It used to be very easy in 1969 to find the alcoholic that still suffered. They were throwing up on your shoe in the meeting. Little harder in 1996. Sometimes the alcoholic who still suffers is somebody sober 5, 10, 15, 20 years who needs a God so bad they're desperate. They need more. They need more. They're at that point when the people are not enough. It's not enough. It's not enough. Oh, you probably won't drink. I didn't drink because I still stayed within the protection. I still had the consistency of the meetings. I still had people. But oh my God, I needed more. So at the beginning, I was powerless over alcohol. Very easy to see. You could take a look at my car, my apartment, my clothes, my neck, anything. You could tell very easily that I was powerless over alcohol and my life had become quite unmanageable. It was obvious. It was physical. You could tell. A few years later, it got a little trickier as I became powerless over people, places, and things. And I had to feel that. You say, always was, just never knew it. And a couple of years later, it even got a little more sophisticated. So I got powerless over envy and jealousy, all of those things. Oh, what a shock it was in my 18th, 19th year when I became powerless over my own ability to manage. I had to give up. Powerless over results. Powerless over creating the answer. I want the answer, and I will create that answer. And I'm an intelligent, bright, sober person, comfortable with my sobriety, traveling all over the world, no concern anymore about justifying it, hiding it, drinking the little soda, you know, making sure nobody sees it. Nobody in a large party, in any business function, is going to notice that you have a club soda unless they're a practicing alcoholic. Nobody pays that kind of attention. Nobody. It's not such a big, gigantic deal. Do you drink? No. Thank you. Used to be, no, I'm allergic. Oh, really? Got too complicated. What happens to you? I break out all over the United States of America. No thank you is sufficient. No thank you. Amazing. No thank you. And then when they find you in a large group, it's because they can't believe you're not drinking. And they've been watching you all night, and they can't believe that the thing started at 6, it's now 10, and you still have not had a drink. So they come up to you, and they say, is that just ginger ale you've been drinking all night? Yes. Why? I don't drink. But you see, that person is special. That person is different. And that person has already begun to speak in a language of the heart that I understand. That person is my fellow alcoholic. And that person, when I look in their eyes, we're talking to one another. And I take them aside. And I don't care if I'm the chief executive officer and they're the janitor. I take them aside and we have a chat. I am a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Is that breaking a tradition? Not if you read them the way I read them, and now that's all that's important. That I, another person, and my God have an understanding of that. I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I had a drinking problem. I was concerned about people that didn't drink too. Perhaps you're like me. Tomorrow night I'm going to be going to da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and I don't care what city I'm in, I usually know where the meeting is. I can arrange for us to go together. I remember before I closed my business and a young, not so young man, had a drinking problem and they were going to, well, they'd hidden it for years, you know, because he was a great worker. You know, wrecked cars all the time, but he was a great worker. His wife didn't look like she was exactly, untouched by those gentle hands that did all that great work either when we'd have little events. You see, you get trained to notice things like that as a member of AA. And they just couldn't quite understand when I finally discovered him, because you see, they justified the fact that he came when he did and he didn't, and you know, I started to walk around one day, you know, part of that power image thing. I was in the answer then. And he was never there when I walked around on a particular day, usually Monday. He was like the guy in the book. And it was Tuesday, and I thought, what happened to Monday? Well, I know what happened to Monday. And he didn't speak English, and I didn't speak Spanish. It doesn't work. I got an interpreter, I got a directory, I marked the Spanish part, and I told him that he would lose his job if he did not immediately do something about his drinking. I'm sure that at least in the Spanish grapevine, it became clear that I was now a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Do I care? I revealed my identity to that man, because that man is an alcoholic. And that man went out of his way to attract my attention. And I said to him, you are stupid when you know that on Mondays I'm going to come by. Now you're going to be really stupid when you know that I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because you see, I have a relationship too, and I don't beat my partner, because I don't have to. And I don't trade cars every other month, because I don't have to. And you're no different than me. And I'm no different than you. So you're going to have to do something about your drinking, or you're going to be fired. And no one will protect you anymore. Because you see, I was dying from potential when I got here. In the answer. Now I'm sober all this time and I'm powerless over everything. Can you imagine such a thing? I never wanted to be powerless over everything. I never wanted to give up control. I never wanted to not manage. I never wanted to not create the answer. I never wanted to build things. I knew the result all the time. I'm going to AA meetings talking about turning it over, and I'm going home and figuring out exactly how it's going to be. And how it's going to work out, and what it's going to do, and blah, 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 blah. And when I judge all the egotistical people in Alcoholics Anonymous, I mean, I'm really calling the kettle black, aren't I? Just a matter of where you put your energy, in AA, out of AA, doesn't matter. You know what I found out? I just found it out recently, a few years ago. I now live in the question of life. What a difference. I'm powerless over anything that gets in the way of God. I'm powerless over anything that I give extra thought to that diminishes my peace, my peace, my peace, my peace. The more peace I have, the less chance I'm going to ever go back to drinking. The more peace, the further away I am. The more peace, the further away I am. It's bullshit. People say, oh, well, you know, in a minute you could drink. No, it doesn't say anything like that in the material. It doesn't say anything like that with people that are honest enough over 20 years to tell you the truth. It tells you that if you build your spiritual condition, if you have peace, if you form a habit of thinking, so that when you think about that God, when you think about that peace, when you think about the solution, it takes you further and further and further away from what you're going to do to self-destruct. We get more clever as we get more sober. My insanity was a lot more clever. Now the unmanageability of my life, where do I see it first? I don't see it at all. I feel it. Something's wrong. It hurts. I have had to train myself. I have had to practice feeling the steps, not talking about them. I got so sick of myself talking about the steps, I can't tell you. I got almost as sick of myself as listening to you talk about the steps. Trying to find, you know, the thing. Listen for the solution. Listen for the similarity. Anything but to work them out with God. I'm powerless over anything that gets in the way. I'm powerless over my negative thinking. I'm powerless over letting it go mad on me. And the unmanageability starts right away. And then I come to believe that I can be restored to sanity. Sanity for me now is a separation from myself and my God. Period. It's out of balance. That doesn't mean that I'm a perfect person by any means. It means that my balance, you know, maybe my parameters are different than yours. Maybe you have a need for more things and rituals and rules and regulations than I perhaps do. That doesn't mean that we're different. That means that our balance is just not the same. But if I go a little over the edge, I can assure you that I will go insane. And in that period of insanity, I will look for something to make me feel better. I don't have any other option. It's the nature of who I am. I found all about the nature of who I am in the fifth step. Nature of my wrongs. I must fix it. I can't stand pain, discomfort. So now when I'm unmanageable, I know what to do. How do you come to believe? Attend a meeting, listen to somebody, put your hand out, make a phone call. Those are the things you do at the beginning. What do you do later on? Well, you do those plus. You say, oh my God, I'm powerless over this. It's made me unmanageable. What must I do now in order to get peace? What do I have to do to restore that balance? Simple. Make a decision. God knows we love to make decisions, for somebody else particularly. Make a decision to do what? To turn our will and our life over to God. I don't know what your will is, but mine is my thinking. If I didn't think, I wouldn't have any will. When I turn my decision to turn my will and my thinking over, what I'm really doing is I'm asking for help. I am asking the question, will you help me? And I don't know what kind of God you have, but the one of my understanding is vast and changed and has changed over the years so much, so big. And it resounds back to me in its spiritual language and says, get out of the way. What have you put in the way? What shadow do you now cast in my ability to get to you? And isn't it great that we then have the fourth step of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous? It is no surprise to me that they call it the step of courage. Because I have to stop, and I have to look, and I have to say, yes, I am honest enough to know that I now am powerless over whatever, whoever, it could be the smallest thing. It has made me feel unmanageable. But I know something can be done about this. I can get that power back inside. I can get it coming from inside again. I can be restored to that balance. Yes, I would like that help. I will make that decision. What is it that is in the way? And I will look to myself and I will write out whatever I need to do. And then I will find another member of Alcoholics Anonymous to discuss that with. And the nature of who my sponsor is has changed so dramatically over the years. And I have the same sponsor for all those years. But I have not used that individual on a direct sponsor basis probably for years. I've used people who have experience with the problem that I find that I am powerless over at the time. I go to the experience. And they help me. And what do they help me do? They help me take all this monumental amount of drama, words, and verbiage and put it in the form of one question, if they're really good at what they do, which is listen, so that I can finally get it all down. And why do I need to get it down? I'm telling you how I work my program, not how AA works their program. Everybody, God willing, will have their own way. And if they're really fortunate like me, it'll change every week. The basis never changes, just the content. Because when I get to the sixth step to become entirely ready, I have to really know in a very concise way what it is I must accept about myself so that I can get out of the way. If I had not accepted the disease of alcoholism, if I had not accepted the desperation of my disease, I wouldn't have stayed. I wouldn't have let God in at all through you, through the rooms, through the signs on the wall, through the missing steps, through the big book, to whatever it is. Like seeing them on both sides, traditions. It's no different today for me. I must accept whatever it is that I am responsible for, that has gotten into my mind, that I have given power to, so I can make room for God. Become entirely ready to do what? To stop the behavior that is now interfered, that I know about. And I found out a wonderful thing about acceptance. The acceptance in the sixth step, to cooperate with God, to use my will to stop myself from getting in the way, to use my will to do what's possible so that I can make room for God to do what is impossible, extraordinary for me. It's become extraordinary for me. So then I can, of course, humbly ask. I can humbly ask because I am humbled by my own acceptance. I can ask because I so desperately want help. I can ask because I so don't want to do it on my own. I don't want the answer. I don't want the result. I want help. I have a question. Can you give me the answer? Can you give me the answer? This is my question. Can you give me the answer? And in the process of all that unmanageability and waiting and looking for that answer, was there anybody along the way that I offended or hurt? And if there is, then I can accept that and accept them and go and correct that today. Because isn't what the steps are for? Today. You're sober today. Today. You've got to do them today. Every day. They have to be kind of like automatic. Today. I reach for that sense of those steps as I reach for a drink. Somebody says, what step are you working on? How the hell do you work on one step? Do you just pull one out and say, well, I'm working on that when I've written 300 pages? Well, you must be really bloody unmanageable if you've written 300 pages. When were you powerless? How did it feel? Did you make that decision because you were so insane? Do you believe that you can be helped? Did you look at your own material? Did you talk to someone so you can refine it and get rid of that bullshit and get to the truth? Did you get to the sixth step and say, ah, I accept that about myself. Now, can you please help me? I'm really sorry if I offended you during that period of time. And you're back to 10. Isn't that a great step where you continue to do this over and over and over and over? But the present, the great present, you know. Everybody talks about the promises after the ninth step. Read on into 10 and 11. Well, spiritual promises are so vast. I mean, they talk throughout the book about this great reality deep within. How I did not know to explain that even to myself. Oh, how I wanted it for so many years. I wanted to know that I could have that too. The safety of that. You know, that secure feeling when you have that scotch. How I wanted to have that God thing inside of me that was equal to that. And then I heard Cubby speaking not too long ago, and he said he doesn't pray to God outside of himself any longer. He prays from God. From God. And as he said he prays from God, I started to cry openly in the meeting of AA because I heard what I needed to hear. He gave me the words to describe what I had been feeling for 4 or 5 years and didn't know how to say it. From God. That great reality. And then I realized, ah yes, I have it. You see, that's the gift of the people of Alcoholics Anonymous. After they save you and carry you until you are capable of doing it on your own with your God. And then they're there to feed back to you. Yes, you've done it. Yes, this is how I have done it. Now identify with my recovery. Identify with my search. Identify with my quest. Identify with my courage to stand up here and to tell you what I do, whether you like it or not, or have an opinion about it. Let me tell you, that kind of vigor puts you in conscious contact with your God regularly. I began that by talking in the car, by talking on my way to work, by talking in the elevators. I used to fill up boardrooms with angels. I had all the answers then, didn't I? I was beginning to have God. I thought, oh, my 20 years sober, this is fantastic. I got God. I've got boardrooms. I've got people. I've got honesty. I've got a great reputation. I've got integrity. I've got hope, honesty, courage, all the things that those steps promise. And then my whole life changed. I turned it all over, and then it all changed. The last thing I turned over was my money. Turned it all over, and then my whole life changed. And then I found out something miraculous, that if I maintain a conscious contact with this God, that I will be unafraid, and I will be in a position where I am capable of having my whole life change. A person who did not want the stool upon which they drank to ever be occupied by anyone else from given hour to given hour, who cannot take any change in their life, who spent many years of their sober life creating an environment and a partner and a home and a business where there would be no change, suddenly reaches a point where everything changes and the question of life became far more interesting and satisfying and became my quest rather than security of the answer. So now when I go to sleep at night, most nights, I have a little ritual. Because I accept that I'm a person of ritual now. My rituals include going to meetings, reaching out, doing what I have to do within the service of Alcoholics Anonymous, doing my best to live within the principles of this program. principles before personality. Practice these principles in all your affairs. What a shock it was when I found out that the principles were the steps. Think about that for a while. Principles before personality. You put all those steps before in front of a personality, they really diminish in front of God. So do you. Enough to be humble. So I go down on my knees every night now. I don't know how not to do that. It's like a physical, spiritual memory. Bam, I'm down on my knees. If I forget, I get so wrecked that I don't want to change this habit of recovery that I get out of bed and get down, even if it's cold. You see, I have habits now that I just don't change. The other habit I have most of the time is I write God a formal letter. You know, it's from my answer day. Dear God, September 23rd, 1996. I date it. It's today. It's about my life today. And I ask all those questions about my today. What do I do about this that happened? What do I do about that? And how do I do this? And how? About today. I mean, I've done enough work over the years in AA about all the rest of it. About today, I direct my questions to my God. How do I handle this? When do I? What, where, when, how, and why? Is it time? Should I? Will I? Could I? And you know that when I sign that, thank you, I need and love you. Thank you for my sobriety. Help me to maintain it. Lila. And I rip it up and throw it in the trash. You see, it's no longer of any value to me. If I get up the next morning and make a bunch of mistakes, it just says exactly what it says in the 10th step. New mistakes. But they're already gone. But you know what? When I wake up in that morning, just because I sleep, my God's not asleep. I don't have the kind of spiritual God now that I believe sleeps. Going on all the time. So while I'm asleep, I expect help. I expect it when I'm asleep. I expect it while I'm awake. I expect it while I'm driving. I expect it while I'm standing. I expect it while I'm eating. I expect it all the time.